All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on Free CR 855 AM. We have our first guest on the program. We're very happy to be speaking to Tali O. Anthony, who is a professor of law at the University of Technology at UTS Sydney. And Tali O wrote an article recently titled Alcohol Bans and Law and Order Responses to Crime in Alice Springs Haven't Worked in the Past and Won't Work Now. And this was published, I guess, in The Conversation. And I guess one probably important reason we have her as guest for our program is probably in the media. The media has just been dominated. There's been, I guess, a discussion about this, you know, crime wave in Alice Springs. And, of course, we're seeing the kind of corporate media and right-wing politicians attempting to kind of use this to kind of drum up kind of racism. Good morning, Tali O.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you very much for being on our program. And I guess the first kind of question, in your kind of article, and one of the kind of opening sort of paragraphs is that you've argued that since the advent of colonisation, interventions to curb Aboriginal crime and alcohol have often, I guess, been deployed to control and harm First Nations communities and people. And I guess, what are some of your comments on the background to this?
Yeah, I think what I'm reflecting on when I write that is that, and this is an article with Vanessa Napoljari-Davis, who lived in a town camp in Alice Springs and is a researcher at Tungundjeri Council, which has been advocating against the intervention, for example, for many years. So when we write that, we really mean that there's a hysteria in the mainstream media that likes to focus on crime in a very specific way. And that way in Alice Springs, in the Northern Territory and across Australia, is very much targeted at First Nations people. And it demonises them in those characterisations of crime to suggest that they're a problem, that they need to be punished, and that ultimately a framework of control in government policy needs to step in to ensure that their lives are subordinate to the state. And so I think that the device of crime it has been quite a strategic one. It's used in social control across many societies. So it's not just in Australia, it's right across the globe in hierarchical societies. But I think it has a very particular feature here in how it targets First Nations people and how it leads to policies where First Nations people are governed in a very top-down way that is coercive, and we saw that absolutely with the intervention.
And I guess probably one of the kind of very specific kind of examples, and you cover this in your article, and I guess, and I think this is probably important, I guess, for our listeners as well. I mean, and especially in the context of how we understand and respond to what's happening in Alice Springs and how the media is responding it. But I guess, can you give us a bit of a historical background on the Northern Territory intervention, which was very much a classic example of those kind of policies? It was started, I guess, in 2007 by the Howard government. And I guess specifically, I want to kind of hear your comments on, you know, why was this policy implemented? And I guess what was the ramifications of that policy for the First Nations community?
Sure. So the intervention was, I think in some ways, the culmination of many years of racism in the Northern Territory, but it was taken to new heights in 2007, as you suggest. So in the lead up to that period around mid-2006, there were reports coming out from Northern Territory prosecutors that there were endemic crime levels in particularly remote Aboriginal communities. So there are hundreds of remote communities and homelands in the Northern Territory that are very much still operating according to Aboriginal ways of doing law and culture, and they speak language in community. And so they operate in a way that does not suit the contemporary colonial system because they haven't assimilated to all the forms of, you know, capitalism and colonialism that requires subordination to a certain type of living. And so in the context of that, in 2006, there were claims that these communities were out of control, that they were harming their children. And then there were media reports from the ABC, concerningly, that there were pedophile rings in Aboriginal communities. And Chris Graham later, through a really extensive and thorough investigation, proved that these were fabrications and there were never any pedophile rings. And in fact, Michael Brule in the New Matilda in subsequent years reported that if there were any pedophile rings, it was happening from white people working in the mining industry. But certainly there were no pedophile rings in Aboriginal communities. Nonetheless, this was a key device that was used to usher in the intervention in 2007, and the policy and laws that I think symbolised the intervention and gave effect to the intervention were the Northern Territory National Emergency Response Act. And what that saw was the federal government stepping in to control First Nations communities across the Northern Territory. So in order to enable that to happen, and this was originally under the Howard government and Mal Brough as the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, to enable that to happen, they had to suspend the Racial Discrimination Act, and that act operates to protect against racial discrimination. So when you suspend that act, you're deliberately intending to discriminate, which the government was. So it suspended the act to enable the government to control the communities and to restrict a whole range of rights, and this includes rights to social security, land rights, rights to have a fair hearing in sentencing and bail decisions, right to enter communities. So before that, there were certain governing councils that Aboriginal people controlled, and they were able to direct who was able to come in and out of communities, which was very important to protect them from negative influences. And all those rights got diminished under the intervention. So it really compromised not only their human rights, but their capacity to protect their land, to practice culture. And I think it was a huge disruption to the functioning of these communities. And, the, 15 years later, because this policy, these laws were then reinstated by the Labor government, 15 years later, we're really seeing how impoverished these communities are. And many of the kids going into Alice Springs at the moment, they're going there because they don't have affordable food in community. They don't have air conditioning or even power. They don't have jobs. They don't have access to, like, social security, Centrelink offices, all the things. And then the kids going to Alice Springs are being blamed for being a problem. So what I would suggest is the outcomes of the intervention are now being blamed but targeted towards the Aboriginal kids who've suffered under the intervention. And it's really concerning because playing out now with the national government going to Alice Springs and talking about top-down policies again, it has all the hallmarks of 2007 when they did that. And they did it really violently then, bringing in the army, bringing in the federal police. And the mayor of Alice Springs, Matt Peterson, has already called for the army to be brought in for the intervention to happen again, and Peter Dutton right behind him.
Yeah, that gets into, you're sort of going into the next question, and you can probably expand on some of that comment you sort of just made, because in your kind of article, you kind of make a bit of a point of this. And, you know, in terms of like responding to, I guess, the kind of this from the corporate media and the politicians around this Alice Springs, crime wave, why do you kind of argue that the government's kind of approach risks making the same kind of, mistakes? I mean, in some sense, in my opinion, I would argue that the Northern Territory intervention was quite deliberate, but, why do you think that, that in the abstract, why does you think the government's current approach risks making these same mistakes?
Yeah, I think because it's responding to this media sensationalism in a way that's very knee-jerk. It's not looking at the issues that concern especially First Nations well-being and safety. Rather, it's taking a knee-jerk response to the concerns of white business, of dominant white voices, and I think that runs all the risks of trampling on the perspectives of First Nations people on the ground who will suffer from any type of knee-jerk, top-down response. And Albanese going in there and, I guess, using his power and position to make these announcements, to kind of rush in and even this review that they've undertaken, it hasn't been led, it hasn't been designed by First Nations people on the ground. And so I think once this takes on a national approach, all of the advocacy over many years that Aboriginal organisations and people have been positioning themselves based on their lived experience gets lost, and instead this type of top-down expertise, political authority gets imposed on people. And I think what we know in terms of effective ways of ensuring the well-being of First Nations people is that it has to be based on First Nations self-determination. And unless they're leading that charge, any policies are almost invariably going to be detrimental because they're done without them. And I think all the good intention and all the goodwill cannot make up for, you know, silencing the voices of very empowered Aboriginal communities and elders on the ground.
Hi, Talia. I'm Sue, one of the other presenters. I was just going to ask you a follow-up question. There have been a few little comments, but not much in the media, about the stripping away of resources from the remote communities, and that being really a major cause of issues that are happening. And even I heard the Northern Territory Police Commissioner interviewed, and he was basically saying you can't jail this crisis, whatever. And he was referring to the fact that the stripping away of jobs from remote communities, the lack of ATMs in remote communities, and other people have been talking about people can't get home to their communities because they don't have the money to get home, or stranded because of floods and other stripping away of resources from remote communities. And then there's also been, I think it's William Tilmouth from Children Ground, saying he's seen these alcohol restrictions come and go over the years, and it's really resulted in nothing. And I know that alcohol addiction is a serious issue, although I haven't seen them talk about, you know, treatment for alcohol addiction or dealing with that. But I was just wondering if you could talk about the impact of the loss of resources in remote communities and the impact that, you know, could be having.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I was talking to Vanessa Nafuljari Davis about her experience, because she lives on the town camps that have had these alcohol restrictions, and her first response was, if we're going to address any issue here, it has to be proper resourcing of remote communities, because people are given no opportunity, they're living in poverty, there's no sense of facilities or opportunity or availability of, integration into a community when you don't have any of that resourcing. And the concern she raised was that when we set up these, or I think since the intervention, when we entrench these systems of poverty, there's going to be a flow on, because the only way people can access any of these things is in Alice Springs or Darwin, and they go there and they're homeless. And it, for at least white people, creates this optics of chaos. But for First Nations people, it's survival. And so I think, you know, since the intervention, we've seen these communities be further starved, and the solution has been a punitive one. Send more of these, rather than more housing, send more of these people to prison and fund more prisons and youth detention centres. And also fund a child protection centre. So these kids who are starving are seen as neglected, not thriving by the territory families, and they're sent into foster homes, residential institutions. And so where the government is focusing its funding and resources is all on the state interventions rather than the community empowerment. And it's also, you know, I guess we can get into this another time, it's also on par with, you know, the opening up of mining in the Northern Territory, of fracking. All these other things are going on to undermine First Nations connection to country. And I think it is quite a deliberate strategy, but we're deflecting from a focus on that impoverishment, that disempowerment, by looking at the issue of crime, by looking at solutions relating to penality and control.
And maybe, because we're running a bit on time, I guess want to kind of, for the final kind of question, and you can kind of attach your kind of final comments, to conclude, I guess, why, yes, in this whole discussion, why is it important that, I guess, First Nation voices are centred in this conversation about how we resolve, you know, the challenges and the issues that Alice Springs is obviously currently facing, but also the wider community within the Northern Territory?
Yeah, look, I think... like First Nations people know the solutions, but they are the solution. I think what Susan said, that, you know, of course for some people alcohol is a problem, and no one hides behind that, certainly not First Nations communities. They don't say we shouldn't be addressing that issue. They say let us address it. And for decades and decades they have had solutions for trying to keep people safe from the excesses of alcohol. And those solutions, including instigating dry communities where they don't let, Aboriginal people don't let people bring alcohol and drinking communities, that was their initiative. So they know how to do these things. When the government came in and imposed alcohol bans and the perimeters, that's when it started falling apart. That's when people started saying, we don't agree with those perimeters because they're not safe, because people can't drink safely in those places you're designating, including in major cities and towns. And so they had safer ways to protect people, not only from not drinking in community, but if they went out to drink, it wouldn't be on the side of the road, for example. And that's what the intervention did. It forced people into unsafe places. So if we started to listen to community who care about those who the children, the elders who live among them, then we can actually see things that work and start to also measure what works from the perspective of the community. Whereas when the government comes in, it does it without any background knowledge, without an intimate relationship, but also based on these metrics and KPIs that some consulting firm will design and assess. That has nothing to do with the safety and well-being from the lived experience of First Nations people. So on every level, the process needs to be led by First Nations people if it has any chance of promoting the well-being and the future survival of First Nations people in a way that's true to their culture and their community and ways of being.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Talia. And, I think this has been a kind of very kind of important discussion. And I think for Green Left Radio, we're hoping we'll cover more of this, and especially potentially we're hoping to kind of interview some First Nations people who are on the ground to actually find out, you know, to actually cover this issue, because I think it's going to be very important to kind of counter the kind of racist kind of hysteria that is coming from the corporate media, and also, you know, standing in solidarity, especially in the context of this very kind of intense kind of community meeting that has been reported to have happened in Alice Springs, that was very much quite, you know, organised by, you know, quite led, driven by kind of some of the racism of the kind of white settler population within Alice Springs.
100%. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Talia.
Cheers. Bye.
Thanks.